Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, whichever language you're fluent or not fluent on. We're thrilled that you're joining us for the 36th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. And I'm really thrilled because this is our first episode after the first series of matches of the season. So we'll have plenty of things on transfer rumors. Don't worry. But I am thrilled that we're getting back to talking about actual games on today's episode. So I'm joined by our great producer, Alex Goldberg. Wanted to ask you, Alex, were you able to watch any Serie A, or were you too busy gloating over Marcos Alonso's great match against Tottenham for your Chelsea?
Well, I can multitask, David. The Chelsea-Tottenham game was certainly exciting and much, much needed for Chelsea. And let me quickly say, I'm not going to speak on Chelsea because I did watch some Serie A, but you can want Alexandro, I wrote this on Twitter, you can want Alexandro on Chelsea and still rate Marcos Alonso. You can just want quality. Just like Pep Guardiola wants 1,000 fullbacks who all play the same position, you can want both. So it was really nice for Marcos Alonso to help Chelsea out because they are certainly short-manned right now. But I did watch some Serie A, especially on Saturday. Juventus, Napoli, both look like the powerhouses. Everybody we've had on predict them going 1-2, and you can see why. I'm a Bostonian, so we overreact naturally. So if I were to draw some quick reactions from those games, if Pjanic and Dybala and all of these players are healthy, Juve are going to win. They're going to win the league. They're going to win another Scudetto. That pass, David, from Pjanic to Dybala, a friend of the show, Adam Joseph, tagged us in a nice highlight of it on Twitter. Immaculate. It was almost like Pirlo was back there. So, I mean, they still have all the firepower. Losing Bonucci is a huge hit, but their offense just really might make it up. And my boy Lorenzo Insigne was fantastic for Napoli. Good road win. So I really was impressed by both those teams. I didn't get to watch the Milans live yesterday, I'll admit. I watched extended highlights, but obviously both of those teams coming away with a good result. The only other takeaway I have from Serie A this weekend was Lazio really laid an egg. They had a great moment last week where they beat Juve in the Supercoppa, and then all of a sudden they can't win at home to Spal, who I'll be honest, I've barely ever heard of. So, you know, the Milans looked good, Juve and Napoli looked good, Roma squeaks by, but I was definitely surprised and disappointed in Lazio's result. David, what did you watch this weekend for Calcio?
Yeah, so I watched obviously both games on Saturday. I watched Roma and Atalanta, and I watched mainly Inter because that's what they were showing on Rai. I watched some of Milan on the BN app with our friends Matteo and Dre. So, yeah, I echo a lot of what you had to say on Juve and Napoli. To me, they look like clearly the two best teams. To me, Napoli, what was intriguing is Sarri seems to have learned and maybe do a little bit more turnover than he has done in years past. They have the return leg against Nice coming up, I think tomorrow, if not the day after. So he did some rotation. It paid off. Milik scored. Milik's going to be a really important player for them. Had Vieira starting over Jorginho. And what a luxury it is to be able to pick between those two. I thought Juve, you know, Cagliari, especially without Borriello, who is joining Spal, was definitely pretty weak, but you can only play who's on your schedule. Juve made the most of it. Certainly Dybala certainly doesn't look like the number 10 jersey is a big weight on his shoulder. He's been great. One thing that stood out to me was the Roma match against Atalanta, and that was really a gritty win. I think that Roma had just really one shot on goal, that Kolarov free kick where I think the Tupac hologram from Coachella would have defended better than that wall on Atalanta. But aside from that, Roma didn't show too much, but the fact that they were able to win in Bergamo and Atalanta's homes, really a great team. I think that was the first time they lost in the calendar year 2017. And if you can have a clean sheet by starting Juan Jesus and Bruno Perez, like that's impressive in and of itself. So although it wasn't a pretty win, it was a very important win for Roma with Juve and Napoli getting all this hype. It was important for them to get off to a good start. So that's the things that stood out to me on Saturday. We'll get into the other teams as we go on with the show. And after we do all our segments, we have a great interview with Aaron West from Copa 90 US that I think you guys should really check out. Some great insight on Juve and Serie A as a whole.
Hey, man, it was a good interview. And David, we have not done winners and losers since Calcio has started. Obviously, it started this weekend. So let's have our first official winners and losers segment with Serie A underway.
So I have quite a few because we want to cover a lot of what happened this weekend. So, of course, the Milan clubs, both of them, very impressive wins. You know, granted, Milan has had an easy schedule, but again, you can only face the team that are, you know, on the schedule for you coming up. They've made the most of it against Crotone. They won handedly. Granted, Crotone was down one man early in the game, but a lot of encouraging signs for Milan. The first one being that they got the Francesi from the first half of the season at Atalanta when every big club in Europe wanted it. He wanted him. He's been absolutely sensational, probably Milan's best player since the summer preseason to now. Young kid Patrick Cutrone, when I retweeted Milan's lineup, I had a few people asking me, who the hell is this guy? And then he scored, had really an outstanding match. So a lot to be optimistic for Milan fans. I think with Inter, you certainly can see Spalletti's hand on the team. They looked really, really great against Fiorentina. Very impressed by a lot of their players, but a big win for Inter. Next week they play at Roma. It's going to be a very intriguing game. You also mentioned Lorenzo Insigne. What a performance against Hellas Verona, another stadium that it's not easy to win at. I thought Napoli played really, really well. Insigne has been really on fire. You can really tell the Napoli players being able to keep all these guys in Sarri's system. This is the third season of these guys playing together. The chemistry between Insigne, Hamsik, and Mertens, and on Saturday we saw Milik, is just really, really enticing. And then two other players that stood out to me: Fabio Pagliarella had a brace, which makes him now the highest scoring amongst active players in Serie A. Certainly helps that Francesco Totti retired, but having over 100 career Serie A goals is really impressive, and now Pagliarella has the most amongst active players. So well done by him. And then the last shout out to Walter Birsa of Chievo, who had a sensational goal against Udinese. I still think he's one of the most underrated players in Serie A. I'm surprised that big clubs haven't gone after him. The flip side for the losers, just a couple of them. Although Napoli had a very impressive performance, to me, the fact that Sarri started defender Chiriches is a sign that Maksimović and Tonelli, two center backs that he spent a lot of money on last summer, are in trouble over there. They weren't able to get in the rotation. Chiriches, who seemed on his way out, seems to be the top backup to Koulibaly and Albiol. So interesting there, because again, Napoli invested a lot in Maksimović and Tonelli. I wonder if one or both will be moved before the window closes. And a last loser, unfortunately, Udinese keeper Scuffè, who finally has his starting job back in Serie A, struggled a bit. Udinese's home loss to Chievo. He's young enough, I'm sure we'll be mentioning him as a winner later on in the season. But Udinese, again, gambled a lot by giving him back the starting job. Carnesi is going to be on his way out. And they loaned out Mere to Spal as well, as a big sign of confidence to Scuffè. So hopefully he can get back on track. So now let's get to the fantastic Twitter questions that you guys send us in. As the transfer window gets closer to the end, we're going to have more questions on Serie A, but of course keep sending in both transfer questions for all leagues as well as Serie A questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, well, before we get into the actual transfers, let's keep on this weekend. David, which players stood out to you in week one of Serie A?
So I'm going to name three on Inter who I thought were really outstanding. That's the main game that I watched Sunday afternoon. Icardi had a brace within 15 minutes. We've had him, both Dre Cordero and our friend Enrico Passarella, who did previews with us, mentioned Icardi as a great pick for top goal scorer in Serie A. Certainly off to a great start. I thought Perisic was sensational. This was exactly the type of match that every Manchester United fan who was upset that that Inter was asking so much for Paddy Seats, like, this is the game that I would show them and why he's perfect for Mourinho. Had a goal, an assist, played really good defense, making up for Nagatomo a few times. But this is exactly why Perisic is such a complete winger. And every time you hear complete, maybe that sounds like he's not devastating offensively, but he certainly was. And then the third player that stood out to me on Inter was a center back, Skriniar. A lot of pressure on him because he's a young center back, came from Sampdoria. I think he's only 21. He's going to be the starter with Miranda. And granted, just one game, but he looked really well, really good, looked great in the preseason. I don't want to jinx him. I also was sky high on Murillo when he started at Inter. If you want to have a good laugh, try to search some of my old tweets on him. But Skriniar looked really impressive, especially dominating in the air on defense. So he should be really an intriguing player for Inter. Two others that we mentioned a little bit were Dybala. Again, really sensational since getting the number 10 jersey, Insigne, and the two on Milan, Kessié and Cutrone, who looked really, really good. Also, shout out to Kolarov for Roma, decisive on the free kick. He's going to be an important player for them because I think the rest of their defense is, a little bit wishy-washy, but he should be able to bring quality to that team. So certainly another player to watch.
I would love to see Kolarov and Marcos Alonso have a free kick contest. They're pretty damn good.
Oh, that would be great.
All right, David, what will Kalinic bring to AC Milan?
So this has been such a long saga. I think we've talked about Kalinic on about half of our podcasts, you know, especially comparing him to the sexier names that were targeted to Milan. First, it was Morata, Aubameyang, Belotti, big name strikers like that. But for me, ultimately, the way you react to the Kalinic signing for Milan depends on how highly you think Andre Silva is going to do his first season at Milan. So Milan invested a lot on this young 22-year-old striker from Portugal. We've heard great things about him. If you think he's ready to be the main guy by, say, mid-fall, then Kalinic is a great signing because Kalinic knows Serie A, can mentor him, can teach him how to play well in Montella's system. Although Kalinic never played for Montella, everyone's pointed out he's very good for that system, certainly more than Bacca. So to me, if you're high on Andre Silva and you're convinced by what you saw by Cutrone, then Kalinic makes perfect sense. The flip side to that is if you're not convinced that those two guys can really do well this season, then you'd think Milan should have invested in a big name striker, because last season, all the teams that finished ahead of Milan in the standings had a goal scorer with over 20 goals. Lazio, Juve, Napoli, Roma, all had guys that scored over 20 goals. So Milan's going to need someone that can at least get close to that. So I'm a fan of the Kalinic signing. I'm probably the more optimistic than Andre Silva, than other people. So if Andre Silva works out well, we're going to look at the Kalinic signing as a very prudent and smart move by Milan.
All right, David, what do you make of the Kita Balde situation after Lazio's president Lotito stated he had better offers from three other clubs, but he wants to join Juve, who is offering far less?
So this was a very interesting interview with Lazio's president Lotito on Saturday. I think it was on Gazzetta dello Sport. So he stated that he received three offers for Kita Balde, over 30 million from Milan, Napoli, and West Ham. But he also stated that Kita Balde has let it be known that he only wants to join Juventus. And because Kita Balde has just 1 year left on his contract, he has a lot of leverage because he could just say, I won't agree to any transfer. I won't sign a contract with a new team. I'll just sign with the club that I want starting in January of next year for free with another club. So from Lazio's perspective, on one hand, you can say, hey, they have some better offers from other clubs. But on the other hand, by waiting so long, now they've lost a lot of the leverage. And on the podcast, we've talked a lot about how the players will, Juve's policy of ultimately letting the players will decide what happens in a transfer. That has hurt Juve because they lost Vidal, Bonucci, and Pogba, Tevez as well, because they wanted to leave. But this is a case where the players' will works to their benefit because Kita Balde wants to join them. So I think Juve's attitude is, look, you know, we'll pay up to a certain extent to have him right now. But if not, we can just wait to sign him for free. I think this makes sense when you consider how much depth they have up front. They already signed Douglas Costa and Bernardeschi. In a way, this speaks highly of Kita Balde, that he's not afraid of competition. He's willing to go to Juventus and prove himself in a way like Dybala did, and the opposite of what we saw from Berardi. So it's a very interesting situation. Let's see if Lazio just gives in and sells him to Juve for cheaper, or if Juve takes the gamble of waiting till January. But then what we saw with Axel Witsel, who then ended up taking a huge offer from China, Kita Balde could accept an offer from another club and sign for free. So it's a very interesting situation, but it just goes to show how the player has so much more leverage once they get into the last year of their deal.
All right. What would Spinazzola bring to Juventus, and will his potential arrival impact Alexandro?
So we've talked about this one ad nauseum. The new wrinkle, though, what's interesting is Spinazzola didn't report for Atalanta's match against Roma. He and the club agreed that it'd be a distraction. He's been practicing separately from his teammates. So to me, this isn't tied to Alexandro. We've talked a lot about it on the show. This is tied more to Asamoah. Spinazzola is pretty versatile. While he's played mainly on the left, he can also play at right back, also could help in the midfield in an emergency situation. So I think Juve sees him as a versatile player, better than maybe some of the options like, say, Sturaro, or, you know, Lichtsteiner or someone like that. Maybe they see him as potentially a better option. But to me, what's interesting is I know Juve fans are very upset with Atalanta, saying, why don't you just give him back? He's our player. But the way I see it, Atalanta's right in holding out, because they all summer long assumed Spinazzola was staying. They sold Conti and Kessié. Maybe they would have kept one of those two if they knew that Spinazzola was leaving right away. So it's an interesting scenario. I think push comes to shove, Juve might help Atalanta buy a replacement for Spinazzola, and he'll come to Juve, and ultimately that'll almost certainly impact Asamoah as opposed to Alexandro.
Anything on Chelsea's interest in Andrea Belotti and Kondreva?
So this question came up a lot over the weekend. I'm not sure where this rumor that Chelsea was back in on Belotti started. You know, I don't like to confirm or deny what other people say, but to me it's a little bit odd, because Torino has proven that they really mean it when they say they won't undersell Belotti for anything less than his 100 million euro exit clause. So to me, if Chelsea wants him, there's really not much to negotiate. You just pay the fee. Maybe you pay 60, 70 million, include two or three young players from the army of loanees that Chelsea have. But is it worth investing so much at a position where I think Chelsea is actually in pretty good shape with Morata and Batshuayi? I don't think Belotti is better than Morata. So certainly Belotti would improve a lot of teams. But with the other needs Chelsea has, I'm not sure that it makes sense to spend so much money on him. As far as Kondreva, he's been linked to Chelsea numerous times. I know there was this picture floating around of Conte with agent Pastorello, and the headline was, oh, Conte's meeting with Kondreva's agent. I'm sure that's true, but it's also true that Pastorello is Conte's agent. So it's maybe a less sexy headline if you write, oh, here's Conte meeting with his own agent. I don't think Inter will sell Kondreva, although they brought in João Cancelo, who's a very offensive right wing back. I think that impacts more Inter's defense. But you never know. If Chelsea makes a last second big bid for Kondreva, Inter might say, oh, we can take that money and invest it maybe at another position in need. But at the moment, I do believe Inter when they say that Kondreva is off the market. The other thing, too, is before our podcast, there's been all this buzz on Marchisio potentially leaving Juve. I read it today in this morning's Gazzetta dello Sport. To me, this is the Bonucci effect. After what happened with Bonucci, I just don't exclude anything anymore. But, you know, Marchisio grew up with Juve. He's from Turin, was in their youth system. Sure, they brought in Matuidi and are looking potentially at other midfielders. I know now they're linked to Kevin Strootman, but that would really surprise me if Marchisio left. We always talk about the player's will being determined at Juve. I saw Marchisio's father had some quotes saying he hasn't heard anything about this Milan story. He's puzzled, and that Claudio's happy at Juve. So we'll see. As we're recording this podcast, I don't think this is likely at all that he leaves Juve, but certainly I could see Milan and Chelsea fans interest in this story, because those could be clubs that potentially make sense if he leaves. But at this time, as we're recording this, I'd be very surprised if there's more to this rumor.
All right, David, the last Twitter question, and I really like this one. What are your thoughts on the behavior of Ousmane Dembele, Kondogbia, Diego Costa, Kalinic skipping practices? Is this becoming a trend?
So the first thing I want to say, which what I found very interesting on this, was the parallel between the players you mentioned skipping practices, and we saw João Cancelo insisting on playing his last match for Valencia despite the fight he knew he was going to Inter. Very emotional after the match. I thought that was a beautiful moment. So that to me was in sharp contrast, especially with Kondogbia, who is going as part of the loan swap deal in it, and he held out from practice. Here's my take on this. You know, there's always two sides to every story. It certainly looks very bad when a player who earns, and the ones you mentioned all earn, big money, especially Diego Costa not showing up for practice, definitely looks bad. There's also two sides to every story. We don't know if the clubs promise anything to these players. It certainly looks, in Dembele's case, that Borussia is really surprised by this. I'm not justifying this, because you're a professional, you're getting paid, you should go to practice. But to me, the players having so much more power with their teams, like, to me, this started when clubs started contacting players and their agent, even when they're under contract with other teams. This has become a really common practice for all teams. So I think, you know, once clubs start doing that, it opens up the door to the players having more power, and maybe this is the end result. You know, I don't justify certainly skipping practices, but I think this has started with that trend. So as always, we want to thank you guys for the great Twitter questions. Next for the interview, we have my good friend Aaron West. I've been following him on Twitter for quite some time. We got into Juventus, Serie A as a whole, Arsenal, but especially his career in journalism. You know, he's really part of the new media. When you see the way he answers the questions, you'll see why. I think all of you out there that are interested in getting into social media, writing, covering about sports, doing videos, will find it really, really interesting. And as always, I want to take this opportunity to thank you guys for subscribing, retweeting the podcast, and leaving us reviews. Okay, so as you guys know, the interview is always my favorite part of the podcast. Sometimes I get to talk to journalists that I've never spoken to for the first time. Sometimes I get to catch up with friends of mine that I've known for a long time. And today I'm really, really excited to have Aaron West join us. I've been following on Twitter for the longest time. This is actually the first time we talk over the phone, so I'm very excited to have him on. Aaron used to be at Fox Soccer for about a year and is now at Copa 90 USA in New York City. He's doing some great work covering soccer, football, as we would say, to our audience. So, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on Podchaland.
Absolutely. Very happy to be here. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Real, real pleasure. You've been really dishing out some great content for quite some time. And recently you were up here in Boston covering Juve, one of their last practices here. And you have this fantastic report that you did with Miralem Pjanic that we're going to get to in a minute. But I wanted to get your impression overall of spending a day with Juventus. What was that like?
It was honestly great. I kind of got to do the shoot last minute, was moving out from L.A., to the East Coast, and got the call like, hey, do you want to go shoot with Juventus? And I was like, yeah, I think I would like to do that. But my overall impression was it's such a professional club. Everyone that we dealt with was super professional on top of everything they were doing, just very nice people. And my overall impression was just it seemed like a family atmosphere. Training was kind of staggered. A lot of the players, because it was preseason, were coming in and out. They were on little different plans. But the atmosphere was pretty familial. And the players themselves just seemed super relaxed and comfortable with each other, comfortable with the fans. One of the funniest things, I think, was I was sitting with Juan Cuadrado, and we were with a group of people. It was just some of the handlers, Juventus handlers, some of my coworkers, sitting in the middle of a training field. And And Mandzukic walked by and started yelling at Cuadrado, like, "What are you doing over here? Why are there guys with you?" It just seemed like a family atmosphere. Those guys are really, really comfortable with each other, and there's just a great feeling around the club that I saw when I was there.
Excellent. And, you know, Juventus have been doing a lot to kind of revamp their brand, especially abroad, you know, the new logo, and doing a lot of interviews like the one you did, which was really terrific. So, like, let's get into the one you did with Miralem Pjanic on what you called the WTAF segment. Is it walking, talking football as opposed
to walk,
what
talk, football.
You know? Fantastic. And that was really cool. So you were walking, chatting with him for a few minutes. The headline was, not surprisingly, him talking about his free kick ability and his favorite other players at doing that. But the part that stood out to me was when you asked him about the languages, and he's fluent in four or five languages. And, you know, I'm always fascinated with the fact that, you know, we follow these footballers and we sometimes forget these are humans first. Like, a lot of them come to a new league, they don't speak the language. So I was fascinated with what Pjanic said, with what he can do with all the languages that he speaks. So I'm hoping you can share a little bit with our listeners what he told you about this topic.
Yeah, and that's interesting you mentioned that. That was actually one of my favorite parts of the interview, though, him talking about the multiple languages he speaks. He actually wasn't 100% comfortable in the beginning speaking English, but it's one of those things where he speaks so many languages so well that he wasn't 100% comfortable with his English, even though it's almost impeccable. He speaks English better than a lot of native English speakers I've spoken with. But the conversation was really interesting to me because it's something that I've been intrigued by with players that do speak multiple languages. Like, do they use them on the field in the locker room? What languages mm-hmm. do they speak? And it's something that we've heard, honestly, I've read about Zidane during his playing career. Like, he would speak to the Portuguese players in Portuguese, Italian players in Italian, Spanish players in Spanish. And so Pjanic, obviously speaking so many languages, he was really, it was such a cool thing for him to be able to speak with Sami Khedira in German, the rest of his Italian players in Italian. He did say the biggest language he wants to learn next is Spanish, hopefully not because he's leaving, just because there are so many players that do speak Spanish. So I thought that was really, really interesting. I think it's such a huge and underrated part of a player's of a player's attributes to be able to speak many languages and be able to connect with the teammates. So I thought that was really, really interesting. He's an incredibly intelligent person. You can see in his play that he's an intelligent player, but he's an incredibly intelligent person as well.
Excellent. I strongly recommend everyone check out the video on your Twitter page, because that's just one small aspect of a great conversation. So I know Juventus is the team you followed the most in Italy, and they have been, you know, in the headlines in the summer, especially with Bonucci's departure, trying to recover from the big loss in Cardiff and trying to defend six consecutive Serie A titles. So where do you kind of see them, especially after spending a day with them? Going into the season, they look good against Cagliari, but it feels like a different Juve than in years past. So where do you see them this season, especially in light of Bonucci's departure?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting season for Juve. It's in my view, it's kind of a rebuilding year, even though it is Buffon's probably his last season, the last chance for him to raise that Champions League trophy. There's been a lot of turnover, especially you mentioned Bonucci specifically. Bonucci is an incredible player, an incredible leader. He is a huge loss for that team. I think in terms of just playing, defensively, we know Bonucci was not necessarily the greatest man marker as compared to some of his teammates, but his passing ability and that leadership that he brought is definitely going to be missed. I think Juve remain Serie A favorites. I think it's closer than it has been in years, especially with Napoli, the way that they've been able to hold on to their star players, the way that they've strengthened with a couple players. They've had a year under Sarri, so they're going to be probably the ones to look out for. But I still keep Juve at as the favorites, edging out Napoli. But in Champions League, I think we won't really know until the window closes and we see exactly who was in the team. Yep. I think there's still a little bit of a question mark at right back. We Blaise Matuidi just came in, but I still think maybe could use another midfielder. So for Champions League, it's still a little bit up in the air for me. If I had to call it right now, I could say probably a quarterfinals finish, maybe pushing semis. I don't necessarily, the way they look just now, don't see them winning Champions League, but that can always change. We've got, what, 10 days left in the transfer window, so things can always happen very quickly.
Excellent insight. So you mentioned Matuidi's arrival. I know you follow closely the French national team. I often see you tweeting about them. So you're more familiar with these players than I am. So you mentioned Matuidi. They've been also linked with Nzonzi. I don't know if they'll be able to get both. There would be a big transfer fee for Nzonzi. If you could have had just one of these two, would you have preferred Matuidi or Nzonzi? And what types of attributes do you think Matuidi is going to bring to Allegri?
For me, I would have chosen Nzonzi just because he is more of a deeper lying, more stable holding midfield type. Matuidi is kind of a box-to-box, super energetic player that buzzes all around the field, cleans up after players, gets into the area. He's just kind of like a whirling buzzsaw of activity, which I think is great, and we absolutely needed a player like that. But if I had to choose one of them, it would have been Nzonzi because he has that ability to play in a midfield three or a midfield two. And if he is one of the two, you can kind of count on him to more sit in front of the back line, distribute, hold his position, and kind of clean up after everyone. Not saying Matuidi can't do that, but that is more of what we have seen from Nzonzi in the past.
Excellent insight. So let's talk a little bit about the other teams in Serie A. You mentioned it earlier, Napoli had their probably Juve's most serious contender. I was very tempted to pick them for the Scudetto, but I'm going to give Juve a slight edge like you. But overall, it looks to me like the most competitive season in Serie A since probably Ibrahimovic left Milan. Sure, we've seen Roma challenge Juve for a while, but really a race where you think, you know, either team could win. Do you feel this way as well? And what teams or maybe players are you looking at specifically this season that intrigue you the most?
Yeah, I think, like you said, this is the most parity we've seen in Serie A in a long time. And as a fan, I am a Juventus fan. Obviously want to see them win the league, but I've been a Serie A fan for a long time. And to see the league return kind of slowly starts to return to where it is or where it was with multiple teams challenging a lot of quality throughout the league. That's exciting for me. As much as I don't want to see Milan great, I do think for a strong league, Inter, not necessarily Inter, let's scratch that. I think Milan needs to be strong again. but yeah, I think, again, like I said, I think Napoli are the strongest challengers for Juventus. Roma, I think losing Salah and with some of the moves that they've made, I'm watching them kind of out of the corner of my eye. I'm not really sure what to expect from them. I think they will eventually challenge, but I have a side eye on them. But for me, it's Napoli head and shoulders above the rest of the pack that are chasing. I think Milan, if they can integrate all those players pretty quickly, which it seems after the first match, they looked very good. They made some incredible purchases this summer. They've finally done business and bought players that they need, which sounds it sounds simple, but a lot of teams just don't do that. I think every single purchase they've made this year directly addressed a need, which for me, if I was a Milan fan, I couldn't have asked for much more. I don't necessarily know if they'll directly challenge for the title this year, but I could definitely see them finishing in a Champions League place. And then next year is when they can really, really make a real go of it. But for me, I think Napoli is the true challenger. And of course, it's got to be Marek Hamšík. That guy, as much as I hate him as a person, because he's a Napoli guy through and through, I would have loved to have him at Juve at any point. Dries Mertens, incredible season last year. I think he scored 34 goals. Lorenzo Insigne, those guys, the way that Napoli plays, I don't think there's a team in Europe, maybe even the world, that plays a more attractive brand of soccer. And it's effective. It's not just pretty and they're passing the ball around and they're not scoring goals. They are getting after teams. They're going to go. It's beautiful. And honestly, it's kind of upsetting to watch because they're so much fun to watch.
Yeah. And I think I really like your comment. To me, the only reason they haven't won under Sarri is because Juve is so good. It's not necessarily anything they're doing wrong. Last season, Roma had their most points ever in a season. And Napoli finished behind them, but that was decided right at the last minute of the last game. So very interesting insight in Serie A. So let's talk about the other team that I know you follow closely. And they're in a pretty different situation than Juventus. And for people that follow you, we know this is Arsenal. So let me get your take on the decision to bring back Wenger. I know in the past you were very ambivalent. You really appreciated everything he did for the club, but it seems to me you thought it was time to move on. So I wanted to get your take on Arsenal this season and specifically the decision to keep Wenger.
Yeah, I've been an Arsenal fan since I was like 13 years old, and obviously Arsene Wenger was there then. Huge respect for him and everything he's done, but I also tend to believe, especially in sports, everything comes to an end. Everyone's time can come to an end, should come to an end. And I thought last year, I thought to start 2014 was probably the best time for him to kind of relinquish his role, move up in the hierarchy, and probably leave as coach. But again, this year, the end of this past season, offered them another opportunity to kind of reset and say, hey, this is a time for us to evaluate who we are as a club, to maybe find someone else who can lead us forward, to kind of reset. They didn't make Champions League. They're in Europa League this year. So it would have been the perfect time to say, hey, we got to find someone who's going to take us into the future. And I think that would have been the time to kind of start fresh, find someone new, maybe move Arsene into a role behind the scenes. But I think he was incredibly reticent to relinquish that role. And because he is who he is at that club, he's such an incredible figure, the one that basically built them to who they are. And because he makes the club a lot of money, those two factors are what kept him around.
I can't agree more with your insight on that. But I want to talk, really, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is not just your insight into the sport, which you know a lot about, but I found your career really, really interesting because to me, you really represent like the new media, where things are going in a way too, because you experienced it on your own skin in a way when you were working at Fox Sports. And I've been following you long before you were at such a prestigious place. Your account was very different when I started following you. You've really grown and done incredibly well in this field. So let's talk a little bit about how you ended up at Fox Sports. And you were there, what, about a year, correct?
Yeah, a year and 3 months or so, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. So you were writing there. I always found your articles very exciting. For those that don't know, then Fox Sports decided to pivot and go to all video content and get rid of basically all their written content. A lot has been made about this. Is this the wave of the future or whatnot? But before I ask you about that, I wanted to get into how you got at Fox Sports and what that experience was like for you.
Yeah. So coming out of college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I had an interest in media. I knew I had an interest in social media, writing, things like that. So I took a job working at an education outreach company, kind of doing a little bit of everything. And from there, I started writing for fun in my free time. And a friend of mine read my writing and was like, this is pretty good. You should submit it somewhere. From there, I submitted it to Goal.com and just started writing freelance on the side, never really thought of it as a possible career, and just did it through the years. I've worked mainly in social media and marketing, consulting through the years, but just kept writing on the side, coaching, trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do in my life. But the one overriding passion that I've always had is soccer. So I've always kind of come back to it. Always talked about it. I've gotten in trouble. I got fired from a job because I just couldn't stop tweeting about soccer. so it through the years, as much as I kind of tried to direct my career into a different area, working mainly in social media and marketing, I always kept coming back to soccer. So I was living in DC about 2 years ago or so, and just got a message out of the blue. It was like, do you want to come to California and work for Fox Soccer? And I kind of thought it was a joke. And I was like, yeah, sure. Okay. I would love to do that. and I didn't hear much back. And then one day, Mike Foss, who was the VP at Fox Sports before everyone kind of that got blown up. Foss is the one who created For the Win at USA Today. And they kind of wanted to For the Win it at Fox, just creating content with unique takes, nothing like no newsers, nothing like just directly reporting the news. We wanted to have unique takes on everything that was going on. We wanted to have a voice. We want everything. Our kind of our motto at Fox was, do you have something to say? If you don't have something to say about what's going on, we're not going to talk about it. We don't want to just regurgitate what's going on. So it was a really interesting experience there, which I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. Everyone I worked with at Fox was brilliant. I think we did incredible work there for the year and 3 or 4 months I was there. Our numbers were great. It wasn't to be.
Yep. So at Fox, you know, it was probably the most obvious example of this thing that we talk a lot in media about pivoting to all video, because the way people are consuming sports is really changing. Like I started off, you know, writing columns, and, you know, it just seems though things are really changing. Like certainly people aren't reading those in front of a computer. If they're reading columns at all, it's on their phones, but people are really looking to consume information on the sport in a different way, which is, you know, one of the reasons I started this podcast. And Fox went, you know, a step further by going all video. Where do you see this going? Do you still think there's a future for fairly long columns, or do you think that's a thing of the past and people are going to be more into videos and podcasts moving forward?
I absolutely do. I think possibly it may be more streamlined. I mean, clearly there's not going to be quite as much content coming out, but I think I don't want to say always, because in 20 years, we might not even be able to read the way that this country is going. But I do think there is a place for long form content. Literally every day when I wake up, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not necessarily looking for video content to consume. I'm looking for things to read. And I think the backlash that we saw all over the internet when these moves happened is kind of a testament to the fact that people do want to read. People still want to read quality writing. There is still quality writing out there. There's a lot of it. There are plenty of incredible writers that are still getting to put their words down on not paper, but on screen, and it's being consumed. And I think that's going to continue. Is it going to be more difficult to get into that arena? Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things, if I had to kind of digress, one of the biggest things, in my opinion, is that people need to be versatile.
Absolutely. I think that's great advice there. So let's close on what you've been doing recently since you left Fox. So you left the nice warm weather in California, came back here to the East Coast in New York City. You're at Copa 90 US. As I mentioned, that great reporting you did from Juve's practice. Everyone should check that out on your Twitter page. So tell us a little bit about your new job. What's a typical day like for you there, and what can we expect from you on this new and exciting platform?
Yeah, I'm really excited to be at Copa 90. It was a pretty big shock to lose my job at Fox, but it ended up really positively. I was spoken to pretty quickly by these guys, and I got a really good feeling from them, and every day it's something new. Basically, so my role with Copa 90 is kind of it's a bunch of different things. I wear a lot of different hats, but mainly I am an on-screen talent. I'm also writing and producing, doing voiceovers. It's a bunch of different things. Also running social. So again, kind of in line with what I said earlier, it's just basically my job is to be versatile and to find and direct the conversations around the game and to find what's cool and make it cool. So day to day, it honestly depends every day. So I'll at least shoot a couple of videos a week. I'll do a lot of writing. I'll do social. I'm the lead for a couple of our social media platforms. So it's honestly, it's, It's exciting because I'm doing something different literally every day, but I'm really proud of the content we've produced so far, and I'm really excited for a lot of the content that we're going to produce as well. We've got another video with Pjanic and Cuadrado coming out that I've been just waiting to show people. I keep teasing it on my Instagram and on Twitter, and people are, I think, starting to get upset with me because it hasn't dropped yet.
Awesome, Aaron. So it was a real pleasure to have you on. Everyone check out the first video they released on Pjanic. A lot more exciting things coming from you. It was a real pleasure finally chatting with you. You're really one of the most talented people I follow. So a real pleasure to have you on Calcioland, and we hope to have you again in the near future.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate it.